All right, so it's my turn to ask the question this week. And our question is, how should we learn poetry? And we've specifically phrased it this way instead of how should we teach poetry? Because how should we teach poetry is like kind of difficult and annoying to discuss. And there are probably some right answers, but not that many great answers. How should we learn poetry seems to be a much looser and easier way to come at this. And given that you are a teacher of English, I really want to hear what you have to say about this.
My first impulse is to say you should learn it however you want. I don't think poetry is like a moral obligation. It's not a duty. Poems are going to appeal to you in the way that they appeal to you or not at all, and that's fine. That's not the whole answer, but like it's my most immediate answer. And I did want to like parse the question a little bit to ask, to what extent are we talking about learning poetry or learning poems in order to be able to write poems, or learning poetry or poems in order to read them and to get meaning or pleasure from them?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I suppose most people write before they learn to read.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we need to start with like, how do you learn to write poems? And then bonus project, how do you learn to read poems?
Yeah, I don't know if I can touch that one. That one's too mysterious to me. What's been useful for you?
Well, I've been thinking about it, and I think all I can really do to start with, at least, is to outline what I have done. And not that this has led me to any great sort of world-shaking success as a poet, but like I said, I think in the last episode, I do think of myself as like a working actor, a jobbing poet who gets to do poetry to some degree most of the time. So I started my very first poetry learning was in high school. We had one lesson or maybe two on the First World War poets. And so you do your Siegfried Sassoon lesson and you do your Wilfred Owen lesson and you do the poem. They still do this, I know, because I was trying to help my nephew with this exact question. You do the poem Doce Decorum Est, and that poem really hit me. I just thought it was quite fabulous, never forgot it, but never formally studied poetry again. So went all the way through the rest of high school, went to uni and did Asian languages and religions, nothing to do with poetry. Actually, like, actively dodged the one poetry class at the end of high school that I could have taken. Didn't want to be there for some reason, was like scared of it, didn't want to have any kind of formal learning. Went all the way through uni, went into the workforce, started writing, started publishing poetry, still no learning going on. Still no real reading beyond like the sort of best Australian. Moved to Melbourne 2011, started a job that I found pretty stultifying, and started to feel the urgency of getting into my late 20s and like, holy shit, am I actually going to be a writer, or is this never going to actually happen? I need to put a bit more effort into this. And so what I did to start with was I would force myself for 10 minutes at the start of every workday to sit outside the office and read a poem. I started with that practice, and then I moved on to this really wonderful course, which is still online through Open Yale Courses. It's basically like English 101 for Yale students. And this wonderful teacher, Langdon Hammer, goes through. Yeah,
yeah,
you're nodding.
Yep. Those are good.
Oh, he's such a darling. You go through, he basically just gives you everything you need to know for, yeah, I guess like a certain history of English poetry. Loved that. Loved actually learning something for the first time. And at this point, I'm like in my early 30s. Then I started in 2012. I did, I think, the first or second round of Al Filreis's massive open online course. This is very like nostalgic now, but at the time it was super cutting edge. This huge community of people coming together around his poetry course called MODPO, Modern and Contemporary American Poetry. He had videos, he had forums. He and the teaching assistants were so active and engaged. Yeah, he had like a weekly kind of call-in hotline, which I closed the door to my little office that I had and like called Al and like asked him a question about, I don't know, a Georgia Oppen poem or something like that. And his enthusiasm was totally infectious, and you could feel it all the way through the course, even through all the limitations of the digital medium. That was like my first real experience with learning. And then I started making my previous podcast, Poetry Says, and I was forced to learn because the project was that I needed to be interviewing poets. Like, my rule was once every fortnight or like twice a month, something like that. And I couldn't really have like effective conversations with these people if I wasn't reading their work and coming up with decent questions. And so the podcast was that was my PhD, that was my English undergrad, that was everything. Like, everything I know about poetry really came through Langdon Hammer, Alfiel Rees, and making the show. So that's like a really weird way to come at it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think there's something weird about, you know, we phrase the question, how should we learn poetry? And, you know, I've got this hang up about talking about poetry versus talking about poems, but I do think there's a kind of chicken and egg thing with poems and poetry, where poems, I think more than some other art forms, depend on being part of, if not a tradition, at least kind of this thing that feels grand and archaic and enduring, and that has all of these sort of cultural assumptions built around it. And I think sometimes those can get encrusted and make it hard to talk about, but also they're part of how I find my way in it. So there's always this kind of motion back and forth, I think, between seeing things in this larger light of poetry and then trying to strip that away and get back to individual poems. And I think there's always like some value in having different kinds of footholds. You know, for instance, like, it's easier maybe to find your way into Wordsworth if you know a little bit about Romanticism. But then also, to some extent, those things can be scaffolding. And I had a professor in grad school who talked about, you know, the way you build something is you put up scaffolding to help you build it, and then you take down the scaffolding afterwards. The scaffolding shouldn't stay up. And so there's a need to take that back down at the same time, to not keep thinking about poetry. But then you go back to it again. I don't know. I don't have a real stable understanding of it, except that I think you have to have both of them. But both of them, on the one hand, poetry risks occluding the poems, and poems risk atomization and losing something of their meaning and their import if we don't locate them in something bigger.
I think one thing that I've realized over time is that it's just not something that comes quickly. Like, learning all that context, putting up all that scaffolding for yourself, and then being confident enough to take it back down just takes a really, really long time. And for me, that's been very hard to accept. Like, I don't ever think of myself as having done the wrong stuff at uni. Like, I'm grateful that I have these languages, not that I ever use them, but I'm glad that I studied languages at uni. But I have always felt like I'm behind. And not just behind by a couple of months, like behind by a full decade, or, you know, at least 5 years, as compared to the people who I work with and who I admire and who I write alongside. Barely a week goes by. It's very rare that I don't encounter I don't end up in a conversation with somebody where they say, oh, of course, and blah, 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 this person, this concept, this poem that's dropped kind of offhand, and I'll go, like hope that they don't notice that I have no idea what that poem is, who they're talking about. And multiple times, like I would try to approach this when I was talking on Poetry Says, I would try to talk honestly and openly about this feeling of intellectual insecurity that I have around like not knowing stuff, not being able to remember stuff, even if I have learned it, like I probably do know it, but it's not stuck. And listeners would get very frustrated with me because they would say, Alice, you're putting yourself down. Alice, you'd need to be more confident. You need to have more like faith in yourself. And to an extent, I agree. But recently, I kind of came to this conclusion, which is like, yeah, but you also have to let me have that. Like, I am in conversation with people who have degrees from very prestigious world-class universities in English, and I don't. And if you get me in trouble for feeling like I know less than them, that feels very, I don't know, I feel very dismissed. It's kind of like, yeah, but they do know more than me. They just do.
Yeah.
Like, it's
I
just
mean,
an objective thing. Yeah.
I have that as well. And, I
Yeah.
think one of the things you and I have in common is that we feel fraudulent or whatever it is,
Yeah.
in all kinds of ways all the time. It's interesting though, you said, behind, and that rings true for me, that rings familiar for me, but it's also interesting in terms of what it implies. I do think there's a temptation to think of, like, again, learning poetry, that there is this thing that we're making this kind of teleological progress towards,
Right, like learning the violin.
Learning French. There's this moment when I will know French, or I will know poetry. And one of the ways that I really like learning is to read good prose about poems. For whatever reason, that's very exciting to me. Whether I'm agreeing with it or disagreeing with it, it does sometimes help bring the poems to life for me. But as I was thinking about things in advance of getting on this call with you, the other thing I was thinking is, like, so much of what, I won't say we do, what I do is trying to learn poetry, trying to become, a better reader, a more informed person, less of a fraud. But I do think it's really important. I don't know if I do this enough. It seems theoretically really important that we read poems uncritically. That if we're always or often trying to read poems to learn and to grow, we're missing out on kind of something elemental. The criticism and the, architecture and even the scaffolding, those are secondary to what presumably at first is an encounter between the kind of sounds and shapes one person makes and another person who hears and to some extent understands and is affected by them. It's interesting how much, I'll digress a little bit. So, a couple of years ago, I read this poem called The Orange by Wendy Cope. And it was just this sweet and lovely little love poem. And so, I was talking to our friend Matthew, and I was saying, I'd like to share this with my students, but I don't know what to do with it. It doesn't really, like, and it turns out it does. I have shared it with students since, and I always have to remind myself that, like, at that age, like, things that seem to an adult very easy to understand are actually still often very hard to understand. You do need more help than I sometimes assume. But there wasn't a lot, it didn't require, to my mind, a lot of, like, analysis or teaching or thought. And he's like, well, you can just have them memorize it. And that is something I do. I have students memorize poems. It's like, oh, right. You can just speak a poem. You can just hear a poem. And it's sometimes remarkable to me how easy it is for me to forget that that's something you can do.
Yeah, you don't have to find anything in it. Doesn't have to be applied to anything or taken apart or analyzed or, Yeah, you can just be enjoyed.
Yeah, and you know, I've got that thing where I always want to be productive. And so, you know,
Yeah.
just sitting there and going, oh yeah, that felt good, or wow, that was surprising. And like it feels like, well, oh boy, I haven't done my job. In a way that, like, you know, I can read a novel and just have fun, or you know, just be heartbroken or whatever, and that seems sufficient. But for whatever reason, maybe the same kind of cultural baggage that has helped me value a lot of poems, maybe it makes it sometimes hard for me to just read them, just hear them, just speak them.
Yeah, well, it's very difficult to get away from that cultural baggage. Poetry carries that baggage, the same baggage that, say, fine art does, like visual art or ballet or classical music. It's the kind of thing that you do have to have a little bit, maybe not always, maybe not for every poem, but it pays off. Like the more you know about it, the sort of the more you can appreciate it. And that's why I think it's hard for me to put down this feeling of, oh, I don't know enough, I haven't learned enough, and I'll never catch up to everybody else's learning. Part of it is like, I know they're getting more out of poetry than I am because they've got more tools to get stuff out of it. Whereas, like, you know, I'm a huge fan of popular music, I love movies. I did like one film studies class in high school, and that was enough for me. Like, that was, I felt like I learned everything I needed to know to be an insufferable film bro for the rest of my life. I don't like need to learn anything more to be completely satisfied that I'm getting what I want to get out of movies. And music, similarly, like, I can play the piano really badly, and I've, yeah, got like a tiny bit of musical education. And I mean, you don't even need that to like get behind a 3.5 minute pop song. Like, that's the whole point of them. But with poetry, it just, yeah, it feels like, I don't know. There is this sort of opposite strain going on that has been going on for the last 15 odd years of poets writing very short, plain, emotionally led lyrics. And most of these are sort of framed and promoted on platforms like Instagram, but not always. They're actually getting like the largest audience of any poems that are being written at the moment, and creating huge numbers of like imitators and young poets who are sort of writing in that way. And it's kind of incredible to me because it's like they're not worried. They're not worried about any of this stuff. They're just like having a lovely time writing poems.
I imagine they're not, like, that's not as much of a, like, historical anomaly as it seems like to
No,
us.
I don't think it is. It's just like in this different format that's like very, you know, easy to disseminate. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think there'd probably been so many moments, like, even probably before writing was a big part of a culture, where there was popular poetry, and there are probably differing levels of quality and differing cultural purposes. But yeah, I suspect that is also, in its own way, part of the tradition.
Definitely. But it doesn't seem to be connected to this like concern that we have about like, have we learned enough? I really want to know about, like, as much as you're comfortable saying about like your students' experience of this, because you're seeing people learn poetry all the time. Like, what are some of the things that strike you about like watching that happen in young people?
I'm kind of a coward about it, in that, like, I'm mostly unwilling to try to get people to like poetry or poems. And I'm overstating the case a little bit, but, like, it's much easier for me to say, okay, how can I use these poems to teach these skills that I'm supposed to be teaching, or get students to think about the world in ways that they haven't necessarily thought about it before. So I go back to this all the time. There's the William Carlos Williams passage where it's asked Fidel that greeny flower, who says, I think I can get this right, it is difficult to get the news from poetry. I think he says poetry. It's difficult to get the news from poetry, but men die miserably every day for lack of what is found there. I don't know what Williams' intention was with that, but my belief is always that what is found there, that people would die miserably without, is not something that's found only there. I don't believe that all people need poems to find the things that they need to enrich their lives. So that's a little bit my excuse for not kind of being an evangelist for poetry in the classroom. But some do. Some get really into it. I won't give too much information because I don't want to like identify an individual. But I've got this student who's very dear to me. I taught him in 7th grade. Now I'm teaching him in 10th grade, and he's like become obsessed with Yeats of all things.
That's so
And
great.
like he's memorized Easter 1916, and then
What?
he memorized Auden's Elegy for Yeats. You know,
Wow.
he's just thrilled by it, and it delights him. So that's fun. But I'm not, maybe just because I think I would be disappointed so often, or would do the sort of thing that I find really frustrating of like the searching for kind of relevance. That this is actually like this other thing. This is like this thing you already like, and it can be, but you know, I think difference is important too. You know, I love teaching Macbeth for all the ways in which the world of Macbeth is so alien from our world. You know, the assumptions and the culture that an audience would bring to that play are so different from ours. And it's, I think that's exciting. And so I don't want to like try and figure out how to make poems more like pop music or TV. Not because I don't like pop music or think it's an inferior medium, not because I don't like TV or think it's an inferior medium, but because those are already really good at being what they are. So I try and teach poems as a way, I hope, of helping students learn how to think and to pay attention and to notice in ways that they weren't able to notice before, and to deal with complexity to an extent that they couldn't before, and to articulate things in a way they couldn't before. But I'm not trying to convince them that poems are exciting or what's missing from their lives. And then when they do, it's fun. It's fun because all of a sudden I have something in common with this student that I maybe didn't expect to. But it's not really what I'm doing.
I suspect that kind of hands-off approach that you're describing, of like sort of take it or leave it, I'm going to present this poem, but I'm not going to evangelize on its behalf, and I'm not going to evangelize on poetry's behalf. I suspect that probably wins you more poetry fans than the opposite approach would.
I don't think so. I think there are teachers who are really good at showing students how poems can meet them where they are. And I think they win over a lot of people. And I think what they're doing is very impressive and meaningful. And it's just not what I do. Again, partly out of just cowardice, I think.
I got really obsessed for a little while with the role of poetry in movies. And I've collected all these examples from films like obviously Dead Poets Society, but also Dangerous Minds, and then like lesser known examples, like almost every classroom movie, maybe not all, but like there are a lot of examples in classroom movies, movies set around the classroom, where the poem becomes a shorthand moment for the character's moment of transformation. The encounter with this poem is the moment at which they realize that their life's on the wrong trajectory and they're going to change everything they're sort of doing. And I became really obsessed and amused by that because it's just not really ever how it actually goes. And I started to wonder, like, why do movies do that? I guess it's like part of it is a shorthand, but it does a real disservice to the teaching and learning of poetry, which is slow and meandering and unpredictable. It makes it look like a very instant, totally effective, no questions type of process, where it's just like the poem connects with the person is forever changed.
I mean, that's how movies typically show teaching. That's even how they show writing. I mean, it's hilarious to watch scenes of people writing in movies.
Oh my God, yeah.
Do you know the movie Marcel the Shell with Shoes On?
I know it, but I never watched it because it looked like it would be too sad.
It is pretty sad. It's like I adored it. I have it in mind because Caroline, my wife, we had a day at school the other day to kind of just slow things down. She showed that movie to some students. It has a really beautiful scene with a Larkin poem of all things, where it's not radical or transformative. It's just Marcel reads this poem that he likes,
Yeah, see? That's
and
great.
then it goes on. Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose it's inevitable that we were going to get into like how to teach poetry rather than how to learn poetry. But one of the things I did want to try to make the case for here that I think still probably doesn't get enough emphasis in conversations about this is learning in a group, learning with others. I was obviously converted to this approach via Al. I think there were probably 1,000 students in that year's ModPo. It got a little bit overwhelming occasionally, but I learned so much from the other students, like way more than I did from Al or any of the teaching assistants. Yeah, and I've never really come up with a better way of learning poetry than to sort of sit with another person and just talk. And it can be like annoying and unbearable because some people are like, oh, yeah, it means this, it means that. And they just waffle on and like disappear into the stratosphere. But if you've got some sensible people to do it with, some sane people.
I think one of the odd things about poems is that they're, generally speaking, they're very, in a way, like singular and individual. Certainly that's kind of what the lyric is. It's this one voice and this one person. They have this kind of, sometimes it's almost like hermetically sealed quality, and they're very private, but they're also very communal. They do have this sense in which, at least if we're trying to get back to their roots, there are these things that are sung out to many people at once. And as much as I worry sometimes about the way interpretation can kind of distract us, they do oftentimes leave all this room for interpretation and investigation. And there's something really delightful about making sense with other people. And I think they invite that in a way that's really wonderful. I oftentimes really enjoy, if you have the person, the right person or the right people, it's really exciting to just kind of look into this little machine together. This machine that has an element of something beyond the mechanical. It's a machine that someone, if it's successful, that someone has managed to breathe life into it again, the Pinocchio metaphor. And so that's part of it too, I think, is the knowledge that we're looking at the anatomy, but we know that there's something else there, that is more than anatomical or is more than the sum of the parts.
Yeah, I think that's good to underscore as well. And this is something we're going to get into in a future conversation. It has to be the right people. It has to be people that you, and that's hard. It's hard to find. But when you do find them, it feels like it opens up this whole other level, this whole other way of being able to approach poems. All of a sudden, you can see things that you couldn't see before because you're looking through their eyes.
I don't think it's that far removed from the sense that I sometimes have of, like, even if I can't add anything to this, and I'm using the word tradition, I don't feel entirely right about that. I don't think that's exactly what I mean, because I think that comes with a lot of implications that I don't want to carry forward. But this, like, living history, I guess, even if I don't add anything to that, there is a kind of companionship sometimes when you look up and realize, I'm reading this poem written, in some cases, in the version of English that I use today, or a version of English that someone else uses today, but sometimes a version of English that someone used 400 years ago that's, somewhat alien to me. And that there's a this kind of strange and awkward and imperfect community that forms. And I think the sort of horizontal community that we create when reading and talking about poems with people who we enjoy reading and talking about poems with has some echo of that.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it.
I was thinking about the sense that when I started writing poems and, like, thinking that was a thing that I did, there was this thrill in the sense that I was doing something that mattered. And you know, it's harder to sustain that. You know, I have a 30 something years, you know, almost 35 years of evidence to show that probably not that, you know, I'm not gonna change the world or set people's minds on fire. But I do think along the way there are all these things that prove to be illusions. And some of them are maybe even illusions that were shared by some of the people writing the poems that we cherish that maybe help us create something that's ultimately real. There's something about being able, and this goes back a little bit to the sense that, you know, we're learning poetry with a capital P, and there's this single thing that we're approaching, like some kind of altar, that even if it's an illusion, it is maybe also indispensable.
Yeah, like that thing that Williams is talking about, like what is found there. You're probably right. It probably doesn't exist just in poems.
Yeah, but sometimes it helps to think so.
Yes, it helps to think so. Yeah, I mean, that I think this is very definitely another conversation. Maybe we can add this to our list, but like, there's something here about it needing to matter, the desire for it to mean something, the desire to, even to what you said very early in this conversation about wanting to feel productive. I think you and I have like quite different experiences of that because of our different cultural context. And that's something that I think would be good to dig into because, yeah, I have a lot of questions, a lot of thoughts about that. It seems hard over there in a way
Yeah, it's
that
not
it
always
doesn't.
beneficial to be a capitalist moron or a capitalist-infused moron. Might be closer to
Yeah,
the truth.
capital. Yeah. And you know, it's not like I'm not infused with it too, but yeah.